Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well. What tips do they have for you and I? And I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Hello, and welcome back to the Potential Psychology Podcast, or indeed welcome if this is the first time you have listened in. I'm very excited to have you here. I am the host of this podcast, Ellen Jackson, and I am thrilled to be launching season 4. I can't actually believe that we're up to season 4 already. And indeed, if everything goes to plan, and I have no reason to see why it wouldn't, by the time we complete our 10-week season filled with expert interviews, we will land at almost exactly the 1-year anniversary of the podcast. So it's a special season for that reason, leading up to our first anniversary on the air. And it's also special because I have some great guests lined up for you for this season. But before I get into that, if you are new to the podcast, what I like to do at the beginning of each episode is to share something that I've learned recently. And seeing as we've just come back from a holiday break, I have had the opportunity to do a bit of reading. And one of the books that I read is called 10% Happier by Dan Harris. In fact, the full title is 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works, A True Story. Now, you may have come across this book before, you may have read it. It was published in 2014, so it's not new, but it is wonderful. If you haven't read it, it is Dan Harris's story. He was an anchorman, or still is, an anchorman on some very high-profile shows in the States, TV shows, including Nightline and Good Morning America. And he had a very public panic attack on TV, and this led him in pursuit of avenues for A, understanding what was going on, and B, then learning to calm his very busy mind. And he discovers meditation and works his way through from first reading Eckhart Tolle and Deepak Chopra through to really starting to uncover some of the science of positive psychology. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. If you haven't read it and you have an interest in mindfulness and meditation, or perhaps you'd like to learn a little more, or you're one of those people who says, meditation, can't do it, my mind's too busy, well, this is an exact example of how to tame that kind of busy mind for greater happiness, 10% happiness, according to Dan Harris. So I thoroughly recommend it. It's a really enjoyable read. It's easy to read. It's very informative, but it's a story. It's a narrative. It's his story, which makes it very entertaining as well. So now, while we're talking a little about mindfulness, I think I might introduce our very first guest for season 4 of the podcast. With me today is Dr. Adrian Medhurst. Adrian is a psychologist, speaker, author, and thought leader on a mission to optimize performance and well-being for people and organizations. He specializes in performance psychology, well-being science, mindfulness, innovation, and emerging technology. He's the author of Meditate on This, The Science of Mindfulness, and the CEO of Benny Button, a well-being and performance business. Adrian describes himself as dedicated to improving the lives of as many people as possible through well-being and performance initiatives. He is a man after my own heart. Welcome, Adrian.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
I'm very pleased to have you. It's taken us a little while to get this organized, so it's nice that we're actually here speaking together, even if we can't see each other because my technology is playing up.
Yeah, things happen, don't they?
They do. Now, Adrian, I'm interested to know, you describe your work as sitting at the crux of optimal performance and well-being. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's funny you pick up on that, and obviously it's a sort of a key descriptor I use to talk about my work, and it comes from a couple of different places. So I'll try not to labor it as it's the start of the podcast, but a crux is essentially an intersection, a crossing point. And what I found quite interesting with the work that I've been pursuing is that we all understand that well-being and performance intersect with each other. They're interdependent. But to really see that come through in theories, models, and analyses and paint the picture of when we're actually in sync with these two interdependent domains is not something that I've really seen. So I got quite interested in, well, what does this intersection look like? How do we measure it and understand it? But the next piece to it is actually from my rock climbing days. Because a crux when you're talking about a rock climbing route, the crux is actually the name given to the most difficult part of a climb. And as a result, I actually think when we're looking at being at our best, when we're looking at reaching our potential, the intersection of well-being and performance, in my view, is the crux. It's the most difficult bit to get right, to actually make sure that you're simultaneously investing in the elements that give rise to both well-being and performance, not where one is sacrificing the other.
So this is, as you speak, sort of the idea of that kind of work-life. We talk about a work-life balance. I like to think of it as a work-life blend sort of come together. And getting that right, we know, is a challenge for everyone. We know that personally as well as professionally. So this is sort of, I guess, that point where you are blending the performance and the well-being and trying to get that right in an equally challenging way. Is that right?
Well, absolutely right. And it's great that you sort of picked up on work-life balance and the fact that we're sort of starting to move away from work-life balance, and many people are trying to find, I guess, another label for it, because we've got a few intersections to talk about, I think. And one is the intersection of well-being and performance, but the other is absolutely the intersections or interplay between work and life. And I actually have a different label for it to throw into the ring as well. I call it work-life agility, because the idea of balance sort of indicates that we should be able to find the right mix. And then when things are balanced, we have this stable sort of state where both of these domains are working well for us, but it's never that stable. It's never that static. Instead, it's a lot more dynamic. And so for me, the idea of work-life agility sort of puts the sort of emphasis back on us to be demonstrating that skillfulness of being dynamic, being agile to changing demands in these two domains of our lives. So this terrain that we're sort of initially opening up, well-being, performance, work, life, this is the space, this is the puzzle that I'm most passionate about.
Okay. And I love that work-life agility idea, because I do think, I mean, we all know, because we know it through just lived experience, that it's a daily, if not moment by moment thing. To give you an example, I just got up this morning. I thought, right, I've got two podcast interviews to record. I've got everything sorted. Kids are off to school. First child went off to school on his bike, all organized. Second child went, I don't want to go to school today, and really looked miserable and not terribly well. And suddenly it was like, oh my goodness, now what do I do? How do I manage this in the moment now? As it turns out, he went back to bed and then decided that maybe he did need to go to school after all. So he has gone. But yeah, that's what it's like to balance things in that moment, because you never know quite what you're going to get. So the idea of agility, of actually having to move and flex and change and adapt moment by moment, I think is a far more realistic descriptor.
Yeah, and I've got images coming into my mind from times that I've been with different yoga teachers in my studies and in my practice. And one teacher, his name was Chris Wilson, he's lovely guy, but we were standing in a balancing posture, and he said, you know, we don't really ever find balance in this sort of long held completely static sense. Instead, we're always balancing, and we were in this balancing pose standing on one foot. And he drew our attention to all of the micro movements that our body was making to respond to the fact that we were standing on one leg, and to essentially recognize that, as you point out, moment by moment, we're making these little tweaks, we're making these little adjustments to work with the moment by moment demands that are present. And if we can properly tune into that, and actually make these little adjustments with this idea of fitness and strength and agility, that can set us up to be moment by moment doing our best. Because if we are otherwise not tuned right in, what we can tend to do is have these overcorrections where we are not fully present, we fall out of balance, off track, and then we have to do a big correction in order to get back on track. And that turbulence is something that can be quite challenging for people. And it's, I actually think if we were more tuned into the little tweaks that we can make day by day, week by week, it's probably going to feel more within our grasp to master and handle, rather than what we can tend to do is make things feel a lot bigger and harder than they are by waiting until things are way off track and then needing to do a lot of work to get back on track.
I am nodding away as you speak here, because I think that's sort of all or nothing. And I know I've had that experience before of really, you know, working too hard to a point of almost, well, I'm not necessarily the physical burnout, but maybe psychological burnout at least, and then kind of overcorrecting and going all the way back the other way, going, right, I now need to do nothing for X amount of time. And then that becomes, certainly as a self-employed person, unmanageable as well, because everything's stopped and you need to gather momentum again. So yeah, that tuning into the little tweaks, making it a moment by moment experience feels a lot more real to me, as you've described it, you know, a much more logical, not necessarily easy though.
No, absolutely right. And I mean, this idea and even this sort of, I guess, principles, they can absolutely make intuitive sense. And so too can, in another area that I'm really passionate about, mindfulness practices. Simple in terms of its instruction and methodology in many ways, not necessarily easy in practice. And this mode that we're talking about is very much in keeping with being mindful. And I think we can cut through a lot of the complexity that we build around living and working at our best. We can cut through that by finding these methods that are actually quite simple, but it's in the practice, the ongoing practice of them, and that we find the value. And that is actually not easy to realize in any sort of sustainable sense. So it's a fascinating topic, right? We've got a lot of work cut out for us because simple in principle, but not easy in practice for most.
Yeah, well, that's the joy of it, isn't it? And it's what's wonderful about being able to have these conversations is it does give us a bit more time, and hopefully our listeners are enjoying it to kind of explore some of the nuance and some of these complexities, because so much of what gets provided to us over the internet and via our various other sources are kind of pretty black and white or appear to simplify things that I think we know are not necessarily simple. And I know our listeners know just through living it every day, you know, life and being human is not simple.
Yeah.
So Adrian, coming back to the crux of performance and well-being. So we've explored this idea that this crux is where the challenge is. What are the kind of the components? What are people trying to, I'm going to say balance, but it's not about balance. I'm not quite sure how you agile something, but you know, what are the components that people are really working with in terms of performance and well-being? What are the bits we're maneuvering around?
Yeah, well, look, there's a lot of elements of this, that's for sure. When it comes to the work that I do and with the business Benny Button, we've actually got an 8-factor model, different elements of those factors as well. It's very much a systems-based view of all of the key elements that need to come together when it comes to well-being and performance. But we've got two what we call hero factors and then another 6 factors, and I can introduce them briefly and we can dive into anything that feels super interesting for us to explore for the listeners. But the first one, and we've sort of been talking about mindfulness a little bit, but we talk about the factor of mindful action. So this is mindful or mindless, getting very distracted, having a mind that wanders uncontrollably, and multitasking a lot or getting swept up in thought. being self-aware of your headspace, your thoughts, emotions, and being able to regulate that experience and the skill of falling into certain tripping hazards that lead us to be unmindful or mindless, getting very distracted, having a mind that wanders uncontrollably and multitasking a lot, or getting swept up in thoughts and emotions without being able to let go and tune back into the present. Mindful action brings together the skills that enable us to be present, to be clear on what our intentions are, and to think, feel, make decisions and take actions, to be at our best as much of the time as possible. So that's one hero factor. And we call it a hero factor because when we can build our capability in mindfulness, in mindful action, the flow-through effect on all other factors that I introduce is lifted. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a keystone habit, if you will. The second one is stress mastery. And we talk about stress mastery because stress is a word has been sort of viewed as the enemy a lot, including, you know, we need to get rid of stress, we need to manage stress, we need to reduce stress. And I'm not disagreeing that that is important for a number of types of stress, but it's also true that there are types of stress that are helpful. There are types of stress that we, you know, knowingly and deliberately put on our plate, and there are types of stress that are actually good for us. And as a result, we need to, I think, adopt a new mindset and skill set to work with and work through and bounce back from the different sorts of challenges and difficulties and stresses and distresses that we experience. So stress mastery is actually taking the fullness of the research evidence that we have and showing us what this can look like for us, being able to once again tune into the stresses that do actually reach a threshold or pass a threshold, and we need to reduce them, we need to handle them or manage them. And what are the types of stresses that we could actually realize are giving us a lot of value in our work and life, that if we bring the right attitude towards them and we bring the right skills in the moments that count, they will actually enable us to deliver high performance, to help us build strength and well-being, and to find ways to do things that lead to learning, growth, and fulfillment.
And I like that, because what I'm thinking just as you were talking about then was this idea of really a bit of kind of almost incorporating those two concepts together. So a bit of mindfulness around stress. You know, you talked about the mindful action being that awareness, paying attention to what's going on, those thoughts and all of that. And I know one of the things that I often talk to clients and groups about is the awareness and then making that decision, is this helping me or is this not? You know, I'm having these thoughts. Firstly, I've got to be aware of them. Are they helpful or are they not? And I'm wondering whether in this stress mastery, it's the same sort of idea. It's actually paying attention to our stress, having an awareness that stress can be good and helpful, but it can also be not helpful. And is the stress that I'm feeling something that's actually boosting me along and helping me to get to where I need to go? Or is it actually that I'm feeling distressed, I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm not coping right now, kind of stress?
Absolutely right. And so these are the two hero factors. And once again, there's a lot of interplay between these different factors. They're somewhat distinct, but they're absolutely related to each other as well. And once again, yeah, when we can cultivate and build these factors, the flow-through effect on other elements of our work and life and our well-being performance factors more broadly is lifted as well. So absolutely right. Yeah.
Excellent. So there are two hero factors.
Yeah.
Where do we go from there?
Well, we go to, let's go to the usual suspects. We have a factor called nourish, which is a combination of are we consuming what the fuel that we need in terms of vegetables and fruit, and do we have digestive functioning at a level that is helping us to absorb and actually be nourished by the fuel that we're consuming? Do we have any habits that might not be entirely great for us? And how frequently do we have those habits? And that might be certain sometimes foods that we have more than sometimes, or maybe it's certain beverage choices that are not ideal for us. And then there's, of course, a really important piece, which is our hydration levels, which is incredibly important, not only for our overall well-being and how our body and mind function, but how that actually translates into the way that we perform as well.
Okay.
I can continue on to move. So physical activity is obviously one that we know is incredibly important for us when it comes to well-being now and well-being and health span over time. But it also, feeling physically fit and strong, enables us to be energized to perform effectively as well. So physical activity, strength and fitness, very, very important. And
I was going to pick up on a point in there, Adrian, because I think what you said there, this idea of feeling physically fit and strong, I know that's an idea often, and this is one of the challenges that I face when talking to people about movement, which I do, you know, because we do know how important it is for well-being and for performance. But one of the things I struggle with is that in people's minds, I'm not in everybody's mind, but I feel that when we talk about movement or we talk about physical fitness and strength and these sorts of things, we kind of instantly conjure up this idea of the athlete or the seriously committed gym goer or the people who are really in a kind of a peak physical condition, which seems, I think, a long way from perhaps where most of us actually are, and there's a big disconnect. But you phrase that then as feeling physically fit and strong, which is obviously an incremental thing that we can all work towards, can't we? We just need to feel a little bit physically fitter and stronger today than we did yesterday or a month ago. You know, do you know what I mean? It's sort of, it feels more,
it's actually
attainable.
Yeah, and it's actually a really, really complicated thing that we're talking about here. I don't want to get bogged down in it too much, but you're right. And then there are other lenses through which people can view this idea that can make it difficult to get really, really precise data. So as an example, someone who trains a hell of a lot but has certain expectations of their fitness, or perhaps in their glory days felt a particular way, maybe there's even a halo effect on, you know, I used to be so fit in my 20s, and they're carrying that forward to present day, but they might be responding to certain questions about how fit they feel and actually scoring themselves quite harshly. When you look at what they do and then you ask them about how they feel, there might be a disconnect. When you might actually ask someone else, what do they accumulate in terms of their physical activity and how fit do they feel? They might have a closer match in terms of activity level and feeling fit, but it's not necessarily going to give us the truest understanding of overall their physical activity levels, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because there is an expectation piece, I guess. I mean, it's there for all of us, isn't it? That I feel it's the shoulds that we know are not helpful for human beings. You know, I should feel fitter, I should feel stronger, I should feel like I did 20 years ago, I should feel, you know, healthier. But how we think and how we feel, those expectations are not necessarily, they don't necessarily equate with reality, whatever reality is, and they're going to be so different for everyone, and they'll be different even within the one individual at different times, won't they?
Yeah, and this is one of the puzzles that we need to be able to help people with, because if a person's mindset is sort of driving them, if you will, towards more, train harder, push, and this is a perhaps what we might call a sort of a performance orientation, if that is played through without respecting the influence that has on a person's well-being and having a person access the mindfulness to say, okay, well, is this level of intensity actually supporting my well-being as well? Or am I pushing so hard to achieve certain expectations of myself that there's actually now an offset or some sort of compromising to well-being? Is something out of sync as a result of this expectation being more pushed down one path and not respecting the other, if that makes sense?
It does. And I'm thinking about the notion of strengths and the fact that we can have a strength, but we can also overplay a strength.
Absolutely. And so whilst we sort of tried to, in some ways, to steer away from using the word balance before, a lot of the principles that I like to talk about and that I like to even explore have this idea of harmony, of balance, of competing forces. And are these things actually in the right mix? Are they in sync for us? And this is why in the work that I do as well, helping people with a personalized understanding of what's going on for them is really important, rather than necessarily having everything be so determined by criteria.
Mm. And it comes back to that mindfulness and that agility too, doesn't it, then, that you need to be paying attention in the moment to what's going on and be agile, because there will be times, you know, thinking about movement when you're not 100% well, and in actual fact, pushing yourself to achieve what you might on other days will put yourself in and your well-being in jeopardy, as you said.
Yeah.
So having to be mindful in the moment and have a bit of agility about what's working and what do I need right now, what's going to be best for me right now, which does involve some thinking. And then you've got to balance that with habits and rules and all those self-expectations. You're right, it's complex stuff.
It is complex stuff.
Okay, so we've had nourish and move. What's our next factor?
Rest. So we know the importance of sleep, but it's also important and increasingly important in modern busy times that we do find opportunities for rest, for relaxation, to actually disconnect and recharge. And that doesn't need to be, you know, put on Netflix and zone out at all. Instead, yep, we can find activities that are replenishing for us, and that too can be, if you want, active rest. But finding opportunities to really properly rest, to refill our energies and get ready, get replenished for peak performance is very, very important.
So recharging the batteries, however that works for us, and there is a bit of individualism in there as well, but I do like, especially as we're sort of, you know, in the summer period where we have more options perhaps to get out there and, you know, hike and go to the beach and do those things that are both restful and recharging without just being kind of zombie-like.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay, so nourish, move, rest. What's next?
So then we've got, and they're the more, I guess, if you will, internal, if that's a distinction that we can draw to the more external. So the three that I'm going to talk about now are connect, work, and grow.
Mm-hmm.
So connect is all about our relationships, the quality of our relationships, and how we engage in those relationships, a sense of social support, belonging, and connectedness, and so forth. Work, which is obviously a domain where we, for most of us, we spend a bulk of our waking life at work. And when it comes to the intersection of well-being and performance, we want work to be an area that is fulfilling needs when it comes to our well-being and sense of self. But it's also true that work is a domain where we perform and we contribute in our lifespan. And as a result, we want that to be fulfilling and a place where we can learn, grow, and realize our potential from a performance perspective. So work is its own factor and has a whole bunch of elements that we dive into quite deeply when we're measuring that. And finally, grow, which we hear a lot more about now than we ever used to, but it's not really common in wellbeing models, I wouldn't say. But when we're, of course, talking about the intersection of wellbeing and performance, once again, growth, ongoing learning, a growth mindset is really powerful when it comes to our sense of well-being, but it's also growth and ongoing learning that does enable us to reach our potential or explore peaks of our potential when it comes to performance.
Okay, so nourish, move, rest, connect, work, and grow. And this, I guess, is asking you a little bit about Benny Button. How do you measure this stuff if you're working with, or firstly, who do you work with this stuff?
So work with a whole bunch of different organizations, really. And the Benny Button business has been around for a couple of years now. And we deliberately went out to share and show, really, that this is relevant for all organizations that have human employees. So we work with everything from the, you know, different departments in the New South Wales government, BlueScope Steel, BHP Billiton, Swiss Wellness, so bigger organizations, also smaller organizations. Vestfarm Capital is a financial advisory firm. Ened is a fintech company a few years old. So whether it's fast growth, smaller businesses or more traditional businesses that we're familiar with in Australia or government departments, this is relevant for everyone.
Okay, and what are they coming to you for? So what is it? I know there can often be a difference between what it is you're delivering and what somebody is wanting,
yeah.
and the two intersect nicely when it works. But, you know, what are they looking for when they approach you?
To understand this space when it comes to the employee experience, recognizing that an employee is a human being that has a whole life that includes work life. And currently, for many organizations, there are gaps and blind spots in the picture of people, the data, if you will, the intelligence that they have on what's actually going on for their people.
Okay.
So we essentially help in a couple of ways. One is to say that there's an opportunity for you to listen and learn from your people in terms of what's going on for them in work and in life. And it's also really symbolic and valuable to communicate out to your people that you do actually care about them and their well-being, and that through, for instance, our instrument, every individual that completes a measurement experience, so we've got an online profiler and we've got different measurement elements that we bring together depending on what the client's needs are, but at the core of it is an online survey, if you will, as a profiler, that when every individual completes it, they receive their own personalized profile. And that's a comprehensive model of the eight factors that I introduced, and mm-hmm. an interactive opportunity to drill down into the sub-factors that sit behind those eight core factors as well. So the individual can understand themselves rather than just completing yet another survey that goes off to their organization, and perhaps at some point, sometime in the future, they may hear something that's somewhat relevant to them.
yep.
That's just no longer good enough in this space. And instead, to actually give people something meaningful and valuable so they can understand themselves and feel like there's an opportunity for them to know themselves and do something about that, as well as recognize that the business now has some de-identified and anonymous information that can get aggregated to show what sorts of themes or patterns might really need to be listened to, so a business has an evidence-based opportunity to set up initiatives to improve well-being and performance in the workplace.
So it really is starting to better inform, from an organisational perspective, those sorts of programs that they might implement around well-being or health or performance, all of those different components that all overlap, and doing it, as you say, so with an evidence base, which means that we have statistics and evidence and numbers and quantifiable things that can be used and, I guess, tailored then to not necessarily the individual, as you say, because it's de-identified, but at least if you find that your organisation is heavy in people who are not moving enough, for example, not sure that was a good analogy, and therefore they can really tailor the sorts of programs that is required, whether across the organisation or I'm guessing within different parts of an organisation, because you'll find different themes, especially in a large organisation, in different locations, maybe different departments, different types of work.
Absolutely right. And what it means as well is that you've got an evidence base for initiatives, so you can actually feel quite confident that when you're putting something on the schedule, that there's a reason for that. But that's for an organisation to understand its reasons. The second piece is, from a participation perspective, if the employees can actually look at a schedule of experiences or initiatives that a business is putting on the table for them, given that they have their own data, they can understand what's personally and professionally relevant for them, rather than seeing that, you know, HR, for instance, has put together this great wellbeing program, but they look at it and they don't really fully understand, well, why would I need to attend to that? I'm busy. Is this relevant to me? I don't know.
Yep. So they've got greater insight because they've got their own personalized profile that explains for them, you know, where the sticking points might be, or where the sort of areas for further boosting and enhancement might be for them as individuals. And there's an automatic match. And I'm guessing there, because it, you know, the same language is used, it really does become a much easier path for someone to take, because they go, this is working on, you know, connection. Connection was an area in my profile that really wasn't so good. I know what to do.
Yeah. And look, it's also true, we're talking very much at a bit of a deficit or gap-based development level at the moment, but organizations will have their strengths, and you'll have a really great opportunity to see just how diverse people are, even if there are patterns, to really respect, acknowledge, and sort of celebrate the diversity that exists. So when we bring groups of people together in a workshop sense, we'll help that audience understand that there are different champions that exist in their organization that are already on certain factors doing really, really well. But they've also got their own challenges. They've got certain gaps that they may need to work on where they're a little bit out of sync. And so it humanizes this whole thing, but it also shows businesses that they have people that they can connect with and everyone can learn from each other in this. And we really want to nurture that, because when you can elevate that conversation and the intelligence that sits ahead of it, where people really do understand themselves and each other and then have both an opportunity and an interest in supporting each other at being at their best by capitalizing on their strengths and working on areas with each other, that hopefully will be setting up cultures to take this forward themselves rather than expect that consultants are going to need to be connected with a level of dependency over the long term. We actually want organizations to be able to self-manage. And as a result, we call this a movement or a mission, if you will, rather than a program. We want to set this up in an organization and give them really good intelligence over time, but really support them in working through this mission over time themselves.
And I love that, because I think, I mean, obviously it's got all those flavors of the growth mindset and you know, starting to develop and grow as a group, and then that culture establishment, that if you can find that positive culture that contributes to the growth of individuals, recognizes them as individuals, gives them a language, gives them, you know, creates an investment across, you know, for all of us into becoming the best people that we can be, then it has so many wonderful flow-on effects, doesn't it, to better leadership and psychological safety and creativity and innovation and just engagement generally. And then that has those flow-on effects to, you know, people getting a better sense of meaning and purpose from their work, and that has well-being effects. So it's a wonderful positive spiral you're setting up.
That's the hope. And in setting up that spiral, I'm glad you used that word, a methodology, just to sort of cut through the complexity of what we're talking about here a little bit. When we go into organizations, we have this three-phase model that actually cycles or spirals, if you will, and it's called explore, transform, evolve. And the explore phase is very much about getting really good intelligence, having leaders understand themselves and their people, and having people understand themselves as well. Then when it comes to transform, this is where we want to set up intelligence or data-driven initiatives for building upon strengths and challenges that exist within an organization's profile. And then the evolve phase is actually that ongoing learning piece. What have we learned as a result of the initiatives that we've deployed? How can we make sure that that is integrated and embedded and used as a scaffold from which to grow over time? And evolve then cycles back into the next phase of explore. What's surfacing for us now in this sort of dynamic understanding of people and data?
Okay, so that is setting up that positive spiral, giving people a bit of structure and again, we don't want to use the word program, but at least some concepts to use, some ideas to follow to see where this can take them from initial analytics and understanding through to growth on a much broader scale for everyone concerned.
That's it, yeah.
Lovely. So that's the work that Benny Button does. Yeah. And I'm wondering, because our lovely listeners won't necessarily, but might one day, depending on their organisation, who they work for and what possibilities arise in the future, won't necessarily have the opportunity to do this kind of, undertake this profile or analytic type process of understanding their well-being. What are the kind of practical steps or tips that you might have for them that they can take to enhance their well-being and performance, or at least explore a bit of that agility now in everyday life?
Well, one thing is, actually up on the Benny Button website, we do have a free trial of the profile.
Oh, cool.
So an individual can have a little bit of a sticky beak for the.
I will put that in the show notes.
And of course, that's just one side of this experience where the individual gets their profile. The organization side of things is a different piece that they wouldn't necessarily get to see, but that's okay. Yep. They can have a look at it for themselves. But when it comes to practical things, I mean, even at its most simple, like we need to actually, human beings, I believe, need to find opportunities to slow down and actually tune into how are we going? What is going on for us in terms of our well-being and our performance and what they mean to us? Do we feel satisfied? Do we feel like we're at a level that is good for us, even optimal for us? Are we making certain sacrifices or compromises that we, you know, with some stillness would honestly say, you know what? Perhaps this is not the way I should be living or working right now, and there are some little corrections that, being honest with myself, I should be making. And maybe there's even some tendencies or challenges that people have that tend to destabilize them, and they might be habits that have been quite deeply embedded from experiences early on in their lives, or they might be evolving sort of habits as a result of the changing nature of work and life that perhaps they haven't been able to fully grasp and get a level of sort of skillfulness or control around. And some of these things that I'm talking about are, you know, in your career, when things transition, are you properly tuned into the way that you're being? Are you still able to be at your best, or is something perhaps overwhelming you and you need to actually slow down and tune into it? Are life factors, is stuff going on with family or with your social life or certain pressures outside of work to do with expectations you have of owning a house or traveling or whatever that might be? But to sort of bring it back to this opportunity that we all have to stop and tune in, to actually reflect on how we are being and consider this from the two sides of well-being and performance. I think that's, and hopefully that feels practical rather than kind of nebulous, but it's really saying we all owe it to ourselves to slow down and tune into how we are going.
Okay, and I think this is probably a really good, well, by the time people are listening to this, it will be the beginning of a new year, which is probably a good time to do it. But I think there were two things that struck me as you were talking that, Adrian. One is this idea of just checking in. So slowing down and checking in, paying attention, which is obviously has to be the place to start, really, if we're going to change anything. But then the tweaks. Mm. So not feeling perhaps like we need to change everything all at once, which is what I think happens when we set ourselves New Year's resolutions, and this idea that I will just somehow be a fundamentally different person from this point forward, which we know is, you know, really setting ourselves up for failure. But having that awareness to be able to make the little tweaks and say, maybe I just need to change this little bit a bit. Maybe I need to be a little more conscious of what I'm eating or some of the eating habits that are not serving me. Or maybe I need to be a little more conscious of the connections in my life and the way I'm interacting with the people in my home or whatever those things. So little simple things. Is that what you're recommending?
Yeah, absolutely. And also to see how these different elements are related to each other, because we talk about spirals a little bit here. We talk about, you know, systems where there's these different interrelated factors. And if we slow down and tune in, we might actually find that there are certain patterns. And perhaps it's, oh, I notice when something becomes a bit busy for me at work, that there's a related drop in terms of exercise, maybe. Mm-hmm. And for a different person, that might be I start making different decisions when it comes to my diet. Or for a different person, that very same thing of elevated demand in the work domain, my sleeping patterns get knocked a bit, or I get a bit cranky, and that leads me to interact differently in relationships. So you're right in saying that there might just be some little tweaks that people can make, but it's also really valuable, and sort of back to this reflection piece, really tune into how these different things seem to play through for you as an individual. because that's where we can feel a bit more confident that the tweak that we might make might just be that one at a critical point in what is otherwise a chain reaction or spiral that we would be best to master. And it's also true that there might be some really great little tweaks that have a flow-on effect to elevate and improve other related elements. So an individual might find that just getting those runners on consistently leads them to make better food choices and to get more restful sleep so that they feel less cranky and stressed and can actually be energized and clear-headed to engage meaningfully in their relationship. So this is what I hope for everyone, to be really sensitive to and tuned into the interplay of these different ingredients that make up what it means to live well and have impact, which is actually the Benny Button motto, these two elements coming together so that we can live well and have the impact that we are here to contribute.
Beautiful. I love that. And I think, noticing patterns and themes, and it brings us back to that complexity we were talking about right at the beginning of and the need for that agility, doesn't it? This is a process of agility, of paying attention to all of these different components. How am I sleeping, eating, moving, connecting, my mood, all of that kind of interwoven to create a single piece of well-being that is constantly flexing and moving and remaining agile, but building up the skills, building up that awareness, building up that knowledge, and then the tools, and then the agency, that kind of belief that we can, to know that we have the power to maneuver all of that. I've come back to the rock climbing analogy in my mind of kind of, you know, maneuvering in an agile way up to build better well-being, which might be something at the top that we maybe never actually get to, but we're always working towards it.
Yeah, and it could be easy for people to sort of, I mean, some people might look at the mix of these different factors that we've spoken about and they might feel overwhelmed because, yeah, there are so many different nuances, or there's different patterns or tendencies that they might have, and they might feel like it's overwhelming to try and do all of them. And we certainly don't want to make it feel overly difficult or demanding. And instead, the whole purpose, I guess, of leading with a data and profiler-based approach is to help to cut through that noise a little bit and just to show people, well, what is in sync and what is out of sync, and if there were certain elements that you could really tune into right now, in terms of bang for your buck, where do you think that that might be? And just to give people a little bit of onboarding and support to that, and otherwise give them that opportunity to see the picture of themselves and to use their own intelligence to decide, where should I be spending my time and energy?
Yeah, wonderful, especially knowing that you can just make some small improvements in one area, and due to the nature of this interconnectedness of the pieces, it may well have those positive flow-on effects to others, which hopefully makes it feel less overwhelming.
Yeah.
Adrian, I think we've unpacked that beautifully. Thank you. Are there any other resources? Obviously, I will point people to the, well, you have a website, adrianmedhurst.com, or is it dradrianmedhurst.com?
Dradrianmedhurst.com.
It is, yep. Yeah. And then the Benny Button website as well, itself, where that, and I'll highlight the little free trial option for people.
Yeah.
Are there other resources that you recommend? Books, websites, TED Talks, your own resources, where to find you online? What else should I tell people?
Oh, God, do I do a plug of my own book? How's that?
Excellent. That's a good start. I think that's a fantastic start.
But if people are interested, this book that I wrote with a couple of co-authors was really designed to show people why. Why is meditation and mindfulness valuable for us? And rather than pushing any particular agenda or methodology, instead looking at happiness, health, relationships, and performance. They're the four sections of the book, and it's looking at what we understand from the research are the benefits of mindfulness in these four areas. And so if you want to be clear on why, so that there's a clear intention and even motivation for embarking on a journey of mindfulness practice, then that's what that book is there for. When it comes to some really cool research on holistic well-being and health span, the Telomere Effect is a great book. A Nobel Prize winning academic who's actually formerly Australian, Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn. That book there is quite an interesting one, and it gets down into the epigenetics and all sorts of fascinating stuff. Then there's a book called Stick With It that's actually looking at the behavior change process and sustaining behavior change over time, rather than what we can often get sold on is some overly simplified self-help type methodologies that are perhaps even evidence-based, but looking at only a one slice of behavior change, really.
Yeah.
I think Stick With It is a really great resource for people wanting to actually understand the different forces behind behavior change and what makes it sustainable over time.
Yeah.
Kelly McGonigal has got a really great TED Talk. She's also got a cool book, and it's called The Upside of Stress. And she's sort of packaged up some great content and research that relates to this idea that we call stress mastery. And some of the research she talks about is actually linked with another academic, Alia Crum, A-L-I-A Crum. She's got a great TED Talk about mindsets that's really, really worth watching as well. So there's a couple of things, but then also directing people to the bennybutton.com resources page. So it's just bennybutton.com/resources. We've got a whole bunch of different recommended apps and books and resources and things there if people are interested.
Fantastic. That is a full kit bag of resources and places for people to look. I do know some of those books and TED Talks that you've mentioned myself. Others I haven't. Alia Crum's TED Talk I haven't seen, so that'll be one for me to look up. And I will make sure that all of those are listed in the show notes and also the guest profile sheet that we put together and put on our episodes page for the show. Adrian, thank you so much. I feel like we've gone on quite a journey through the complexities of well-being and performance, but come back to a lovely practical place. And I really do believe that there'll be a lot of things there for our listeners to think about. Certainly got me thinking, and to start to explore, use the opportunity of a new year to start to explore their own well-being and where some tweaks might be made for overall improvement, enhancement and happiness and greater success.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this chat with Dr. Adrian Medhurst. If you're keen to get some insight into the intersection of your well-being with your performance, there is a link to the free trial of the Bennybutton Wellbeing and Performance Profiler that Adrian mentioned, and it's in the show notes for this episode, along with Adrian's well-being tips, a description of the Bennybutton 8-factor model, and the other resources that we've mentioned during this episode. And as I mentioned in the intro to today's show, there is other new stuff in the potential psychology world. We have a very comprehensive and very free downloadable collection of over 130 parenting performance and well-being tips garnered from our podcast episodes for seasons 1 to 3 of the show. So we've taken them all and put them together in one spot for you to download. And you can find a link to that download at potential.com.au/podcasts, or just follow the podcast link on the homepage menu for the Potential Psychology site. And that's not all. My first ever ebook, The Positive Parenting Toolkit, is now available. It's a compilation of the biggest, best, and most helpful parenting ideas that I have come across, researched, and used myself with our family. Plenty of practical strategies and tips to help your family thrive in 2019, and that's available in the Potential Psychology store via the website. You'll find a link there on the homepage, or just hit the store menu at the top of the homepage. And if you enjoyed today's episode, or you're enjoying the show in its entirety, please do let us know. We have many, many more great interviews lined up for this season, and I'm really keen to hear what you're enjoying the most. The easiest way to do that is to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. I read and appreciate every single review, rating and comment. Your feedback is wonderful and much appreciated. So what is coming up next week on the Potential Psychology podcast? I am talking to Professor Lindsay Oates from the Centre for Positive Psychology at the University of Melbourne, all about thrivability and how we make well-being everybody's business. Here's Lindsay to tell you a bit more.
Individual, family, school, local government, workplace, sports clubs, communities, state government, federal government, everyone's business, economic metrics, the whole lot. People, when they truly start to understand well-being, they'll understand it as much more than their individual.
And I will see you next week.
Actually, I have a lot to say about multiple things, including economics. So people start to discover how broad it is, and then they'll realise there's a lot more to it than they may have originally thought.
I'm so excited to be back, helping you and yours to fulfil your potential in 2019. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next week.